Welcome. This is Matthew Bronson, and this is Conversations with Matthew Bronson here on KUPR 99.9 FM on your radio dial from the high desert of Placidas, New Mexico. And today on Conversations, we have a visual artist, I think is the correct. So it's going to be interesting to do some of this on the radio. But if you enjoy the audio version on KUPR, you can always check out the video in a few weeks on abqlive.tv. So with that said, we will welcome Judith Roderick to the program. Good morning, Judith.
Good morning. Thank you.
I'm going to attempt to let everyone you know and people you don't know get to know you a little bit better or know you for the first time. Because as we have found out over the last year plus, that there are so many interesting people in Placitas that they don't even know how interesting they are. You know, it's I used to practice it as an engineer, and you work with other engineers, you work with other scientist type people, and you don't realize how much you know till you go to a cocktail party with, say, someone else's friends, and you start talking in the acronyms.
Oh,
and
yes.
So you've been in the artist community for decades.
Yes, since I was a child.
But one of the things I do like to establish up front is, especially 30, 40 years ago, let me ask the question, when did you take residence in Placidas? When was your zip code?
1975.
Okay.
No, that's when I moved to Albuquerque, 1975. I moved to Placidas in 1999.
When you moved to Albuquerque in 1975, were you aware of Placidas?
No, if I had been, I wished I had bought land here then, right?
So, how soon after you found Placidas? Well, how did you find Placidas? Mine was a wrong turn on the highway.
Oh, I had a studio in town, an art studio, but I also had a women's drumming circle that met every new moon, starting in 92. And
I'm going to say that's the first time I've ever heard of a group like that.
Oh. Oh, I think they're quite common.
See?
Well, anyhow.
A women's drumming circle.
Yes, every new moon, a group of us got together and drummed. And
it started at a particular time or
moonrise? Oh, yeah. Well, it was different months. It depended. Sometimes we'd go outside and watch it. It was new moon. There was nothing to see except the stars. But I also did solstice and equinox ceremonies and things. But anyhow, someone in my drumming group lived in Placidas and had a sweat lodge. And so I started coming probably in 93 to Placidas, way back. I couldn't even tell you where, and I loved it out here.
And we're only like 3 minutes into this conversation, and there's a second thing. I've never known anyone who knew someone who had their own sweat lodge.
Oh, I knew two people out here. Another friend of ours from that drumming circle moved out here, built an off-the-grid straw bale house and built a sweat lodge. So I used to come out for two sweat lodges.
And for the uninitiated, what is a sweat lodge?
Well, it is from the Native American tradition, and I did it first with Native Americans. It is a ritual method of cleansing, praying. Hot rocks are put in a structure. Water is poured on them, which creates steam, and you have, in a sacred way, gone into that structure, and then you're in there for four rounds, one for each of the four directions, going inside, praying, talking, sweating, clearing, cleansing. It's difficult, but it's a very useful tool. And
sure. So it's a spiritual sauna.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not like in the movies where you end up everyone taking a drink of something and then going to very bizarre places.
No, you're just sweating and going to very bizarre places.
Naturally,
right.
And your own engine. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then, in 1975, where did you come from to end up here?
We had lived in Colorado Springs before that.
And that's your place of origin?
No, I'm from Pennsylvania. I grew up near Pittsburgh.
Okay.
In Pennsylvania, and my husband did too.
Was Pittsburgh an active steel or coal
town
at that time?
My dad was a steel worker.
That's a hard job.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of coal mining and steel.
You didn't want to go into that line of work?
No, not at all. No.
When you were in high school, you were already doing art?
When I was in fifth grade, I was chosen from our school. They chose two students from every school in the greater Pittsburgh area to go to the Tam O'Shanter classes, which were art classes down at the Carnegie Museum. Hundreds of children went. And I started doing that in fifth grade, and all through junior high and high school I did that, and I ended up going to art school there at Carnegie Tech.
I know these are TV shows, but sometimes like Glee or something like that, theatrical thespians go to special high, or there are special high schools in New York City, and then I guess they're tech high schools. Did you go to a high school like that?
No, this was the 50s.
So you're lucky they had a right. High school.
I was glad they had the Tam O'Shanter classes.
And as a growing up, did your parents ever say, Judith, you picked up, when you first got your first crayon, you just were Picasso?
Well, no, but
I ate mine.
My mother was a difficult woman, and my best strategy was to not make her upset. So the best way to do that was to be quietly drawing in the corner somewhere, or coloring or painting. And I learned that very early, and I did that all the time. So
survival skills are something that we all learn one way or another. Right, and so where did you meet your husband?
Actually, on a blind date when I was in high school. He was a friend of my cousin's, and he had gone to the Air Force Academy and hadn't come. He's there for a year. This was his first time off. And my aunt said, Patty couldn't go out on a date unless she found me a date. So
it's amazing how much of that. It does sound like an episode of Father Knows Best or something.
So,
in the 50s.
He was a very nice person, and he was a lot more intelligent than most of the boys I knew then.
At that age, boys aren't very smart.
No, they weren't, but
we grow into it slowly,
yes.
But
so
eventually, untold.
I just dated him mostly by writing letters all the years that he was at the Air Force Academy. Mm. I was working my way through college, working at a drugstore, commuting. It was fine because I didn't have time for anything else. No, I worked at a drugstore and delivered prescriptions on the hilly, snowy roads of Western Pennsylvania.
telephone from Pennsylvania to the Air Force Academy would have been expensive.
Oh, we did a telephone.
Right. So we
wrote letters on paper.
Right. It's it gives you time to think about what you're going to say.
Yes, it worked out just fine. And I married him after 3 years, and he was by then in graduate school at the University of Michigan. So I finished my last year of college at the University of Michigan.
And what did he become, at least professionally?
He was in the Air Force then. He was a plasma physicist, an aeronautical engineer.
He was a lot smarter than most boys.
Yeah, he was. He was in the Air Force for 20 years, and then he taught at UNM for 30 years.
And so you came out here with him?
Yes. Yeah.
And was it fun being a military wife?
I wasn't a military wife.
Oh.
Okay. He was in the military. I was myself, being an artist everywhere we went.
Now, you have a very unique style of dress. I'm going to assume because you're a seamstress, right?
Yes, that too.
Do you make your own clothes?
Well, I did for many years. I don't so much now, but
well, like
now,
but
I'm sewing quilts instead of making clothes. But
well, yeah. Where does one go to find your slacks or?
There are interesting companies on Earth, and this one was Bluefish, and it did exist in Taos for many years, but it has moved on. But luckily, these clothes are timeless, and I just keep wearing them. Mostly, I just hang scarves I made around my neck.
You ever wear someone else's scarf?
No, I have, but I have so many of my own, I usually wear mine.
I didn't know if there was someone that you had befriended in your artistry
Oh, yes. No, there's many wonderful artists in the world. I mean, right here in Placidus, Bunny Bowen, who's a good friend of mine, makes wonderful scarves, yes.
But do you trade?
Oh, we have traded. We have each other's work,
Well, that's fun. I mean,
There's a whole...
I listen to other radio shows than mine, so I'd want to wear someone else's scarves than mine.
There is a silk painting community. I am a silk painter now, and I have been since 82. There is a large silk painting community in the world. I just attended the International Silk Painting Conference in Gatlinburg, Tennessee at Arrowmont College back in October, and there were 130 happy silk painters from around the world there. Here in New Mexico, we have a silk painting guild. There's about 15 of us from right around the Albuquerque area.
I became educated to the ways of Arrowwood.
Arrowmont.
Because my wife and her sister went there a couple years ago to take a pottery class.
Oh, it's a beautiful place.
And they said it was amazing that even totally unartistic people like myself could go and take a class in woodworking or metallurgy.
Yes.
And the highlight to me is when she texted me a picture of the pathway to in between classes, and there's a brown bear there.
Oh, yes. I saw a black bear when I was there. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that's... that's not always on my list of things to do on a
Arrowmont reminded me much of Ghost Ranch here, in that people from all over the world can go there and do all kinds of wonderful things.
So in 75, when you all came out here, that was your first gallery or your first business, as opposed to, well, you had a brick-and-mortar store downtown.
Starting in 82, I became one of the owners of Village Wools, which was a fiber supply store here in Albuquerque. And for 10 years, I was one of the owners of that. It was a weaving, knitting, and dyeing store, and I was the dyer. And I was batiking first, so I taught that and had those supplies. And then in 82, I started silk painting because the silk dyes came to the United States. They were not here before that. They were so much more brilliant than the dyes I had been using. I was very drawn to them and immediately started using them and was making silk-painted clothing then. And I got those supplies for Village Wools and taught classes there practically once a month and had a steaming service for people. And I taught at Ghost Ranch. So in those years, I did a lot of teaching.
And you were a working partner. You were integral part of it.
Yes, there were usually two or three of us, so...
In the beginnings of silk painting, the dyes, who invented them?
Well, they were, I don't know, but they were common in France. I had seen them when I had been in France, but they just were not available in this country until 82.
You hear about the great masters used to go out and pick their berries or roots or whatever to make the pigments the way they wanted. Did you ever think about making dyes?
Oh, I did that, too.
I would think the plasma physicist is going to help you with that.
No, he was busy. After we were married, after he got his master's, he was assigned to Holloman Air Force Base. So in the 60s, I went from Pittsburgh in Ann Arbor, Michigan, to Alamogordo, New Mexico. That was a shock.
Yes. even people who come voluntarily, knowingly, it's still...
I spent the first year looking for the green middle ground, and finally I realized it wasn't there. But by that time, I had come to love the wide vistas, and I had come to love... It was like I loved the microcosm and the macrocosm, because I'd just go out my back gate and find the crinoids and the little shells and think, this was underwater? I mean,
yes.
And every time it was a big storm and that arroyo ran and moved all those rocks around, and I discovered Three Rivers Petroglyphs area very close to there, which is still my favorite petroglyph area. I just visited it a month or so ago. I found things to love out here. And
isn't it's green down by the river.
Yes.
And in the, I don't know if it's Los Ranchos or something. That's all farmland.
Yeah, no, now I'm fine with it all, but it was a shock then.
it's just getting some used to, or just adjusting what's pretty, what is alive.
Right.
You have to look a little harder to see stuff.
So when I came here, he went to work. So we had to buy a house. There was no place else to live. So there I was, and I was an oil painter, so I just set up a canvas in the living room and start oil painting. I was very happy. I'd go outside, paint the mountains, do all these things. And then I got pregnant, and the smell of the oil paint made me sick. So I had to stop oil painting. So my friend lent me her loom, and I thought, well, I'll teach myself to weave, spin, and dye. So I did. So in those days, I did a lot of natural dyeing to dye the wool with my...
Why didn't you go for the low-hanging fruit, like crocheting or knitting?
I don't know.
Looming?
Well, and I also started batiking then on a large scale. I had briefly learned that in college, although college in the 60s, art school was a male-dominated, all the male professors, and you only learned drawing, painting, printmaking, design. There was no fiber. There was no nothing. But one time I had a woman, substitute teacher, come in one semester, and she did give us a glimpse of all of the fiber arts, and I was just, I loved them. So when I couldn't oil paint anymore, and my friend lent me a loom, I learned to do all that, and then I started batiking. And that was really better suited to being a mother of young children. With oil painting, I remember the day I was standing there painting when he left for work, and I was still standing there painting when he came home, and I hadn't eaten all day. It really would alter my state of consciousness,
sure.
And I just did it. And I didn't. And it dawned on me that this would not be a good thing to do while raising a baby. Forgot the baby was in there or something. But batiking was a piecemeal process. You put wax on the fabric. That was one process. You could stop right there. Then when you had time, you could go dye it, hang it up. You could stop right there. The next time you had some time, you could come put some more wax on it. So that was much better suited to being a young mother. So I started doing that.
And when you were done with that, you moved on to the silk painting?
Well, I batiked for 20-some years. I did many large panels hanging on walls, things framed, clothing. I batiked about everything a person could batik and showed it in many venues.
Right.
And then when these dyes came, I was mostly, with the way I was batiking, you got monochromatic colors because you over dyed. So you dye yellow first, and then you dye orange, and then you dye brown, and you couldn't get to blue. You know, you were covering up the color underneath. So when I saw the brilliance of these silk dyes and all those brilliant colors together, I was so excited. So I was happy to change to a brighter venue.
Right. A lot of your work is large.
I mean, yes.
Is it similar batiking? Well, quilting I think of big. Batiking, I don't know enough about to know whether it should be bigger or small.
Oh, it could be any size. It's just a piece of fabric.
But when you, I know with other artists I know who do like acrylic or pastels or whatever, it's always a big deal as to, am I going to go up to the next bigger size? Because it's a whole different realm that I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's just a bigger canvas, so mm-hmm. everything that you're painting is now bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true with quilting? Do you worry about, was it a decision to go, okay, now I'm going to make one twice as big?
Well, I'll go back to art school. We were not supposed to move our fingers to draw. We were supposed to move our arm, our whole body. We started out working large. I can work any size. I have painted acrylic. I have painted watercolor. I have done all sizes of all of it. And it's the same with the quilt. When I have an idea for a quilt now, the size is somewhat, I get ideas. It's like I have a queue above my head.
Right.
Full of ideas. And it's like, who's next? And for some reason or other, I decide, oh, this one's next. And then I can kind of see how it wants to be. And a size goes with that. So I make all sizes of quilts, depending on
the
subject matter.
Document or have a diary so you don't lose any of these ideas?
Oh, no.
No? They're there?
No, they're all there. Periodically, I mean, I have sketchbooks. I briefly sketch things down, jot things down.
I forget what I had for dinner last night.
Well, I do too, but I don't forget what art wants to be made.
I guess that's the difference between an engineer and an artist. That must have been an amazing experience trying to negotiate raising a child with a very artistic, earthy person.
It was.
And
I've heard children.
I've heard engineers can be difficult. I don't see it, but
my husband was not difficult. He was just in his head doing his math and science, and we coexisted very well.
You couldn't turn it off?
He did his thing, and I did my thing, and we had two children, and we managed to raise them, and they're lovely adults.
Well, as a young family, did you say, I want to go look at the wildflowers, and your husband would say, no, we're taking the biopark, it's more educational?
No. Pretty much anything I wanted to do, I did. and pretty much I took the children most of the time because he was often too busy to take vacation. So.
Oh, so they tagged along as opposed to you saying, I should expose my children to XYZ.
Well, I mostly wanted them to be outdoors. I took them hiking. I took them camping. I drove them back to Pennsylvania every year to see the relatives, you know,
all those things. That must be an interesting drive.
Oh, yes. by then, my husband had gotten very allergic to cats. So I promised him we wouldn't have any more cats. And I was traveling a lot in those days, and he was at work a lot. And we have no fence or walled-in area in our yard. So I haven't had pets since then. I've just put out food and water and watched all the wild creatures come. And that's my fix now.
Do you get more of the scary kinds of animals?
Well, I'm not afraid of them.
Okay.
I mean,
well, stereotypically, a panther. Shouldn't be afraid of a panther or a cougar?
Well, I've never seen one. I'd be very curious to see one. I've seen bobcats where I live. I've seen coyotes. I've watched a rattlesnake lay under my bird feeder all day. I've watched a snake drink from my fountain.
Now, that's interesting.
Uh-huh. And the horses come by periodically because there's no wall or fence and there's a bird bath standing there. So I have wonderful pictures of the wild horses right out my kitchen windows. And I've done quilts of them. And I like to look out there and see something alive and happy and moving, and it makes me happy.
Before I forget, when you arrived here in 1975 in Albuquerque from Pennsylvania.
From Colorado Springs.
From Colorado Springs.
Yeah.
When did you have your first green chili cheeseburger? Or when did you become aware that it was this thing here?
I learned that in Alamogordo.
Okay.
So I craved that when we were back at Michigan or at Colorado. So as soon as I came into the state, I was a vegetarian a lot of those years. So I probably had a green chili, cheese something or other. But yes.
But do you remember someone saying, hey, green chili, it's where it's at?
Well, I remember that in the 60s when someone took me to my first Mexican restaurant when I lived in Alamogordo and ordered for me, and I started eating, and I started crying. I turned bright red. And thought I was about to die. Yes. But I've grown to love it.
Kind of like the first time you have wasabi at a sushi
restaurant. Oh, yes.
They need a sign. Use sparingly.
Yes, yes.
All right, well, that's the obligatory question I always have to ask. And from reading about the amazing variety of types of art you have done, and apparently successful in all of them, did you ever consider this a job? Could you have paid the mortgage with this? Was that ever your intent?
Some years I could have. And some years I could not have. And that wasn't my intent because Norman, being in the Air Force and teaching at UNM, always had a steady job, and he paid the mortgage.
Right.
So I bless him for that to this day. And so I've had a lot of freedom in this lifetime to try a lot of things. I had a very my most successful artistic venture was during the 80s with silt-painted clothing, because it became a bigger and bigger thing through the 80s till I was probably in 10 galleries around the country, And at one point, I by then had a large warehouse of a studio,
right,
and would paint all day. And it started out, I did the sewing too, but it would take me all day to paint a coat, all day to sew a coat. I preferred the painting.
Right.
So I hired one seamstress, two at one point I had four seamstresses sewing for me, and I was painting all the time.
And were you, your business was covering your expenses? Or?
Oh, it was doing well.
Okay.
It was doing a lot more than that.
And so did you, being the 80s or whatever, did you ever sew or paint anything for Prince or Elton John or people who tended to be a little more...
No, not that
dressing.
I know of, but I used to do... There were major craft fairs across the country that I did in various venues and museums, and in those days, people would just come to the opening with fistfuls of money and wave it at you. And I mean, it was amazing.
It is
then.
The good old days.
It was the good old day. It was delightful. It was a wonderful time to be an artist and a silk painter, and I got to travel all over the country, be in lots of galleries, paint lots of beautiful things. Mm-hmm. People were happy with them. I did so much trading with other artists for jewelry, for pottery, because they all wanted to wear the clothes. So it was a wonderful...
This is a Roderick.
It was about a decade of it was very good. And mm-hmm. then everything comes into existence, and it's in existence, and it slowly goes out. And that whole wearable arts trend started going downhill, and by that time I was tired doing that. I would either have to have someone else paint for me, which was certainly not anything I wanted to do. That was what I liked. So I did it for a long time, and then I would reassess my life every New Year's. And one New Year I said, well, I've proved I can do this. This has been good. Do I want to keep doing this? And the answer was no. So then I did other things for a while.
But even when you had the very successful warehouse with the four seamstresses, it's no longer art. This is a business. And to me, it would take the art out of it.
Well, to me, it was always art, because what I loved was the painting, and I always continued to love the painting. And I managed to do the other, but it wasn't my joy of life.
Right. But it's got to be done.
Yes, and I could do it.
So you're doing your art, being an extremely attentive mother, and how do you find get into that first gallery? I mean, out of town.
People in those days, people would come to you at shows and ask you to be in galleries.
Right, so you would show locally.
No matter where I lived, I got in venues, I got in galleries. And
so it's like a baseball scout. They go around the country to different
places. In those days, it was. Right now, I really am not in any galleries, and that's fine with me. That's just not what I'm doing now. In the art quilt movement, which I am very grateful for, there is... Well, I'll back up a little bit. I did art quilts periodically through all of my other careers. When I batiked, I would do a quilt now and then. When I was doing silk-painted clothing, I would do a quilt now and then and hang it in my booth. Most of them are owned by other artists. In 2008, my mother was not doing well. We were cleaning out her house. I have a box of her buttons. I brought it back.
Isn't that neat? Because I still have my mother's box of buttons.
Yes, many people have their mother's and their grandmother's buttons.
But they're all cool buttons.
I brought mine back. I had a silk painting hanging on the wall in my house. I walked in, I looked at that, and I thought, that would make a good quilt, and I should sew buttons on it. So I did, and that was so delightful. So that was 2008. Then I really started making quilts, art quilts, and I discovered SAQUA, Studio Art Quilt Associates, which has also, it's an international art quilt organization. It now has thousands of members, but we have a local New Mexico branch of that. And when I found them and joined them, I was so delighted, because they were people like me who had been artists their whole life and done all kinds of things. And now they were making art quilts. And anything goes. I mean, anything a person could think of and do is like acceptable in their shows. And so to me, it was so exciting that I could use all of the skills that I'd had from everything else, make whatever came to my little brain and heart to make,
right,
and I'd have a place to show it. And so that's how I've been operating since then. So right now, I just came back from Houston. The International Silk Painting Festival in Houston is the largest one in the United States. There's like 1,500 quilts in this.
Wow. Is it 1,500 quilters or quilts?
Quilts. And I had two quilts in it this year. And it's just so exciting. It's everything from traditional to the art quilts.
Mm-hmm.
So this year in the Sakwa venue, which this year was Tranquility,
right,
and Turmoil, so there was, they create a beautiful room with about 25 quilts in it with benches and flowers, and inside that room we hung the Tranquility exhibit where my whooping crane reflection quilt was hanging. And then on the outside of those walls was the Turmoil show. So it was wonderful. It was the Tranquility right inside, the Turmoil outside. And I had the wonderful, it was like a serendipitous moment. I had been looking at all of these quilts. You get so exhausted, you finally have to just go sit down. You can't look at another thing.
But it's amazing, Judith, that after all these years, decades of doing quilts, not excluding all the other decades of artwork, but quilts, and just get back from a show, international show, and you're still almost, it seems like you're as excited as you were the first time you went to one.
Oh, I am. But I have,
how do you hold on to that, magic?
I want to tell you this story. This has never happened before. So I go into the Tranquility exhibit, and I sit down, and I'm just chatting with someone I don't know who's sitting next to me, trying to get my energy back up so I can go back out. And Martha, who runs the gallery there, walks in with this man, and I see her putting a red dot on the label to my quilt. And I'm thinking, did I just sell that quilt? And then she turns around and she says to him, oh, the artist is here. You'll get to meet the artist. So I meet this Texas quilt collector who bought six quilts out of our exhibit. And he was this lovely bird-watching man, and we had a wonderful time talking. And I just happened to be there the moment he bought it. It was so cool.
I'm still amazed that there's anybody who collects quilts.
Oh, yes.
I can see having quilts in, I mean, if I have the wall space, whatever, I can see having quilts represented, but not, you know, collecting them like I
oh,
do.
Yes.
I like pepper shakers. The one that you can crack your own. I collect those. Some people do shot glasses. This guy does quilts.
Sakwa has a Sakwa journal. Sakwa is the studio, Art Quilt Associates. They have a Sakwa journal that's a magazine we get every month. But this year they also started the collectors, a Sakwa collectors journal. And that guy looked familiar when I first saw him because there was an article about him a couple months ago in that journal. So that was cool.
He must have a very expansive home, or does he do them like...
We were talking about his bluebird houses, so I'm not sure about his home, but I know he has a large quilt collection, and he's not even going to get my quilt for 2 years or the other quilts he bought, because when we get into these shows travel for usually a two-year time period from show to show to museums.
Right.
So he won't get that quilt until they get done traveling.
So it's like
anyhow
going on the road with the yes Broadway edition of Cats,
where it goes yes around. Yes, sort of like, just
or,
like
the,
that.
The King Tut exhibit.
Right, yeah, right. So I have about six quilts out traveling the world right now. And this year, one of my quilts went to Australia. One went to England and Ireland. And they're still traveling.
You know, as part of the show management, do they make sure it's handled properly?
Oh, yes, absolutely. When you get into a show, all the quilts are shipped to their person in charge of that, and then they take care of that whole body of quilts to every show, get it installed, right, put out
program guides.
And, yeah, books about each show. And,
right.
They do a wonderful job.
Not to be too base or banal, being in a show like that, Is there money in that? Is that a professional? Well, is that like selling? I mean, I know when you sell
them. There's money when you sell them, yes.
But being in the show?
I really love being in the shows. It is an honor. To see these shows, they're such high-quality work. I love the other quilters that I've met. I get so excited seeing each show. It was wonderful to actually see that Tranquility show in its wholeness. During the quilt festival, each day, we would, at a certain time, do a walkthrough with all of the artists who were there, and so we would each speak about our quilt. So you would get to know the story behind each quilt.
Right.
And they put up our statement on the wall, and for some of the shows, like for this one, we were to record a 90-second statement also about our quilt so a person could dial up and listen to us speaking about our quilt.
Before we go forward, I want to circle back a little bit to some of your silk painting, or wearable art. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't take credit for doing a celebrity, but from what I read, you did the costumes for the national show and fair. No, I'm the Civic Light Opera.
Yeah, that was the most fun thing I ever did. I made Joseph's Technicolor Dreamcoat for the Civic Light Opera, which was quite a feat.
Yes.
But yeah, that was lovely.
Is there a coat that Joseph wore that people identify with? That's Joseph's coat that you went after, or you just did your own thing?
I honestly can't remember, but it was a Technicolor dream coat, so it had every color in the rainbow on there. And
quilts seem to be, each one is incredibly unique.
Yes.
And you must have your own style. I mean, can people say, oh, that's a Roderick by
yes.
looking at it? So are there ever
Because I am a silk painter, that is rare in the quilt world. I mean, most quilters come at it from another direction. So for my quilts, they started out as a piece of white silk.
Right.
So I painted the image on the silk, painted all the other parts that perhaps I sew on, and then I put that together and make the quilt.
And would you, have you ever seen anyone else's quilt? You go, yeah, I like that technique. I think I'm going to use a little bit of that in my next quilt.
Oh, yeah. It's always fun to see what everyone does.
It's not like a comedian stealing a joke.
No, we're all so creative. And there's nothing new under the sun in the art world now. You know, everything's
it's all been
done somewhere, and you put it together in your own unique way.
Well, that's true. It's you put things together one way, you have a car, another you have a ship, right?
Right.
I don't know if that's a good analogy, but you also teach art.
Oh, I have for many times. I'm not at the moment because in 2004, I finally gave up my studio in town.
Okay.
I moved here in 99. I loved it here. For a while, I just didn't want to go into town. So finally, by 2004, I just said, I was going less and less into my studio.
Right.
It was 5 minutes from my home in town. It was a half an hour from here.
Sure. And I tell my wife, once we move in, I'm not going further west than the Merck for at least
mm-hmm.
6 months.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of what I did.
This is the place to be.
Yes, it is. And so I gave up my studio. So I am now, when I do paint, which is normally in warmer weather, and I paint on my kitchen table or my kitchen counter with all the doors and windows open, or else I paint in my garage, which is unheated. So therefore, I am not painting there now. So I paint in the summer when it's warm, and I sew in the winter. I can't remember what your question was, so I don't know if I answered it or not.
I'm not teaching
because I'm in my kitchen. I mean, I have taught a few people since I've moved out here.
So if someone hears this and would like to take classes, would you want to hear from them?
No.
I promise it won't be me.
I taught for 30-40 years, and I taught all those years that I owned Village Wools. I taught at Ghost Ranch over a 20-year mm-hmm. period. And when I had the large studio, I also taught out of my studio. And then I had room for several people to
right.
do it. At my home, I have taught one or two people now and then. That's
well,
all the room I
teaching
have.
Teaching to me, besides teaching, is that the Roderick quilt style lives on. That you have an apprentice or a protege or someone that just really likes the way you do it And they, that's what they want to do.
I never thought of it like that.
Right. Well, I mean, you're nationally and internationally recognized for this style or technique or... Well, think about that. I'm not volunteering.
No, that's not my goal in life, is to create an apprentice.
but if someone wanted to, not that you were seeking it, but I will move on. On judithroderick.com, you have a wonderful, almost gallery of various quilts and art that you've done.
Thanks to my daughter.
Yes.
Thank you, Heather.
As I have said, I know so little about this. It was interesting to me how under your quilts, they're categorized. You have a whole section for birds, mm-hmm. a whole section for creatures, which mm-hmm. just fascinated me. Ancient cultures,
mm-hmm.
Sustenance. Oh, sustenance.
Mm-hmm.
See, spell check is terrible. And other creatures.
Well, I had
there were too many creatures.
I had this body of work, and we were trying to create a website for me, and we were trying to figure out how to categorize what I do, because when I'm doing something, I'm not thinking, what category is this? I just do it, and then
right. Here
they all are. So, like, I have a sandhill crane quilt here today. That would be in the bird section. The whooper reflection quilt that I just sold. I love the cranes, and because they're so large, I love all the birds, but I don't want to make a bird 10 times its size on my quilt. That would be a little startling to me and the bird. So,
and there's a bird that you would like to be if you were a bird?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd like to be an eagle or a whooping crane, but as it says on my website, like to collect and amass things and arrange things. The birds that I have been the most fascinated with for the last decade, besides the cranes, were the bowerbirds. Because when I visited, I knew about the bowerbirds before I went to Australia. And I've been to Australia twice, and I've managed to view two of them. They are a bird, kind of our roadrunner size, that the male collects a lot of twigs and creates a bower. And then he decorates his bower with objects. There's many different species of bowerbirds. The different bowerbirds collect different color objects. And David Attenborough has wonderful YouTube videos of the bowerbirds.
I'm glad you said Australia, because I didn't recognize the
Australia
bird.
And New Guinea. The one I just finished was the one from New Guinea who collects red objects. And I have been collecting red objects for 3 years to get a nice collection so I could do his quilt. So I did him this summer.
When you say objects, you mean...
Mostly buttons and beads and flat objects that I can sew on the quilt.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Not a Santa hat or anything like that.
Oh, no. He wouldn't want a Santa hat. He and I had a wonderful time making his bower and decorating his bower. So therefore, I believe I would be a bowerbird, a male bowerbird, because I like to do that as well as anything.
Right. Sounds like fun.
It is.
Again, I'm going to backtrack just a little bit. When you were teaching, you mentioned something on some website I saw. Basic Guta or Guta?
Guta is a resist for silk painting, in which you are out of a little squeeze bottle with a little metal tip in it, so you can draw on the fabric with this guta, which is like rubber cement, and it makes a dam, basically. So if you make an enclosed space with that, put the dye in there, the dye stays there. So that's how I draw on the silk.
That's pretty cool.
With that or with wax, which is like the batiking process.
Right.
And I use them both.
Last but not least, unless I think of something else, you, as I understand, are very active in the Hard and Narrows Birders, Backyard Birders.
Well, yes, I'm now the head of the Backyard Birders group, yes.
You're the head bird.
I'm the head bird, yes.
You like birds. Who doesn't like birds? How do you get to the point that you want to be a bird watcher or in the Audubon Society?
Well, I am in the Audubon, and I volunteer at the Rio Grande Nature Center, and I have for 10 years. I've always loved birds. My mother fed birds. I've always liked birds. And when we moved out here, I love looking out at the mountains, but I wanted to see some movement out there. So I put out a bird bath. And it just makes me happy every time I look out the window and see, oh, who's out there drinking? Who's out there taking a bath? Right. Put up some feeders. It's just so delightful to see all the variety of birds that come. And then when I discovered Bosque del Apache and the cranes and started traveling around the country to see the whooping cranes, I just became more and more interested in them and wanted to learn more about them. So
you went to different parts of the country specifically to see the whooping cranes?
Well, yes, because they're not here. They're the world's most endangered crane,
right.
And there's a central flyway with a flock of about 300 that goes from up in Canada to the Texas shore, Aransas, Texas. So I've driven to Aransas to see them there in the wild.
That's really liking whooping cranes.
Oh, yes. And one day when I was working at the Rio Grande Nature Center, someone mentioned the International Crane Foundation. I didn't know about it, and I asked her something, promptly forgot. I swear like a week later, somebody else said the International Crane Foundation, so I went home and looked it up. And it's this wonderful place in Baraboo, Wisconsin, where it's a conservation organization for the cranes of the world, but it's also like a zoo for cranes. They have a pair of each of the 15 remaining crane species on exhibit there. You'd never see those in your lifetime. So I hightailed it right up to Baraboo so I could really see those cranes. And I've probably been there 7 or 8 times. And I would stay for a week and just observe them, draw them, paint them.
You are a traveling person.
Well, if I wanted to see them in this lifetime, in this body, that was the place to go. So I did.
Birding, I mean, I like birds.
Good.
I love seeing birds. And as I said earlier, I'm going to go ahead and put that water feature in or two to bring all kinds of things. I'm going to lure the birds in so the other predator animals will have something to eat.
Oh, yes, we have the food chain in action there also.
But I don't know if I would get to the point that I want to know every kind of bird or every kind of flower. That flower is really nice. It's pretty. It's yellow. It smells good. Maybe because I'm no good at Latin. But, I mean, you delve right in there and not only want to know what they are, you want to know things about them.
I just tend to do things like that. When I get into them, I get into them. And because I'm this old, I've gotten into a lot of things.
Sure. Did anything ever not work out?
Oh, sure. You can just do something else.
Right. Well, you said that growing up you had, you drew whatever for self-preservation.
Yes.
Is that what kind of developed your independent, confident attitude?
I was not confident at all then, but...
Well, so what happened?
Well, you just kind of improve with age. I don't know.
So some do. Some of us learn from our mistakes, and some of them us don't. I skipped over an area that I definitely don't want to miss, and that is at some point in your life, you went on almost like a spiritual journey. You traveled.
That continues.
I couldn't find a lot of details on that.
Write a lot of details on that.
I mean, I try to improve emotionally and spiritually and interpersonally, but I don't think I could say I took the last 10 years to do this. It's just part of my life. You kind of mentioned it in a way that it was like an activity.
Well, it was after I did all those years of intense silk painting for the clothing. And when I decided I had done that and I was done with that, my sister and I went to Machu Picchu. It was my 45th birthday, her 40th. We'd always wanted to go there. We went there. We hiked the Inca Trail.
From bottom to top?
It was 4 days. It was over a 13,000-foot pass. It was the hardest thing I ever did. And when I got there and saw the beauty of that site, it was like the earth took me by the shoulders and shook me and said, wake up. And I did. And so then I tuned back into the earth, away from art so much. I was so tuned into art all those years, which was wonderful. But then I was tuned back into the energy of the earth. And I started traveling to places that I'd always wanted to see and places, ancient cultures that I'd wanted to investigate more. And we spent years going to Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, all the different sites in Mexico, and spending time there at the ruins and just being there with them.
So when the earth shook you, was it like a thing? I mean, was it like a being or a presence of some kind, or you just got shook?
I started meditating in, after my son was born, which was 71, because it was harder having two children than one. And I was trying to not be like my mother, so I was trying to be a kinder person, and meditation really helped.
You always hear the cliche, Judith, that the second one's easy. I mean, you already you know the gig now.
Well, two of them. There's just more to do.
Twins.
And I loved meditating. I mean, I could do this for hours a day, except I had two children and a life. And so early on, I decided, all right, I can't really focus this much on meditation and be someone's mother and live on this planet and be married. And so I'll do this when I'm older.
Right.
So when I got to Machu Picchu, it was like, all right, I'm older. All right. I can do this again. I can focus back in on my inner life and the energy of the earth and everything I love again. And so I started doing that.
And the message was, wake up.
Yeah.
But wake up to what or from what?
Wake up to the larger view of life on this planet and why one might be here.
And other than your personal enlightenment, do you do something with that knowledge?
Oh, I have done various things through the years. I've taught different meditation classes. I've built three or four labyrinths, including this one, which to me is a meditation tool, among other things.
Right. And we're at the Placidus Community Library,
yes.
And there is a... There's a special name for that labyrinth.
It's like it's a seven-circuit labyrinth.
Seven circuit.
Yes.
I don't know what that means.
Well, it means you go around seven times.
Oh, okay. Very clever.
I laid it out. I scraped those little rows into the dirt out there. I know that there are seven of them. Periodically, I make quilts like the latest one I just made, this Earth in the Balance quilt, about what I think the Earth is hanging in right now, with global warming, with everything else that's going on. And I think the more people that pay attention to what's going on and care about the Earth, the better off we will all be.
How can that not be a good thing? That's
right.
You raised your two children here in Placidus or in Albuquerque?
No, they were adults by the time we moved out here. No, I raised them in Albuquerque. And they both still live in New Mexico, and they each have a child, so now I have two grandchildren.
Excellent. Well, congratulations.
Yes, I love that. It's a lot easier with grandchildren.
Oh, yeah, you can just give them back. I don't know if this is a relevant question or not, but if we were to get them on the phone, which we don't have the ability to do, but if we did, and I said, tell me, give me 30 seconds about your mother. Would they both say kind of the same thing?
Yeah, probably.
And they probably had a...
Yeah, I mean, they think that I'm an interesting person and I've had an interesting life. And I've been a lot nicer to them than my mother was to me.
There you go. You learn. But do they have the art gene or bug?
No, they don't. Well, yes and no. Not like I do. But my son particularly is a pretty much of a Renaissance person and is... very interested in learning how to do many things, and he does many things well. My daughter, she does my website. I'm very grateful for that. She is the IT at Taos Ski Valley. So she has more of my husband's brain. They both are a nice combination of his brain and my brain.
Well, we were just up at the Taos Ski Valley for the first time.
Oh, it's a mess right now.
Yeah, it's like they're building a super highway
up there.
I
mean,
I don't know why.
In a couple, because a billionaire bought it and is putting a lot of money into improving it. And in a few years, it might be very nice. But
so it's private money. That's not DOT money.
Well,
then they can build bigger road if they want. I'm okay with that.
He has big ideas, but they're not done yet.
But what a cool place for your daughter to work.
Oh, it is. It's been a wonderful place for them to live. And I mean, they hike, they bike, they river raft.
But where in the world does your grandchild go to school up there?
Oh, he goes to Taos High School right now. He's 15, and the school system up there has been very good for him. Yeah. He's really liked it.
I find it very, to me, personally interesting, growing up in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., inside the Beltway, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
And then I meet people who have never been east of St. Louis, and just that environment growing up in different places, what you have to be a product of your environment. Mm-hmm. So your grandchild to grow up in Taos Ski Valley, mm-hmm. That has to be really nice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it has been.
So, all right. Last, I promise, your book of poems. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that. And is it available on Amazon?
No. I did this years ago, and I just self-published first a book about the sandhill cranes, and then after a couple years after I had traveled to see the whooping cranes so much and had a lot of poems from them, then I just did a book of two. We have two North American cranes, the sandhill cranes that are so abundant here and the whooping cranes. And so I, at that time, Bosque del Apache has a crane festival every year, and for many years they had a large art fair section of it that I always did. So I had my crane scarves and my crane quilts and my crane poems, and those days are past. But
if someone wanted to secure a copy, how would they do that?
I don't have any.
Is there any in the library?
Oh, yeah, I think we have one in our library here.
Okay, so you can come to Placidas Community Library. Yeah. What is the name of the book?
Poems from the Cranes 2, T-W-O.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think that we'll have to check with the librarian in about a month after this program airs to see if checking out of the poems for the Cranes 2 has spiked. It could happen.
I don't think I'll lose any sleep over this.
You know, it'll be something interesting to await my phone call to say, Judith. So, we're going to do something a little bit different because you are a visual artist and you brought in some quilts and some other examples of your work, which we can't show you on KUPR. So there's going to be 5 or 10 minutes of overtime on abqlive.tv. So if you're hearing this on kupr.org in their archives or their live or their stream, go to abqlive.tv and just fast forward to about minute 55 or something, and you won't have to hear all this again. You can just look at the new stuff. So for Conversations with Matthew Bronson, speaking with Judith Roderick. See, you're very interesting, aren't you? This has been Conversations with Matthew Bronson on KUPR and 99.9 FM in the high desert of Placidas, and thank you.